With Hyphen Magazine, I'm Christian Ting with a very special edition of Hyphen in Hollywood, our special entertainment podcast. Today I'm joined by two very special guests from Netflix's upcoming and currently released Wu Assassins. We have Lee Jun Lee and Celia Au, two co-stars from the film. Guys, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
How are you doing?
Good. It's a beautiful sunny day in Southern California, and we're talking about Asian American representation through a very commendable new series. So once again, first starts, congrats to the both of you on, you know, the recent release has been out for what, you said 8 days now?
Yes,
eight days. Wu Assassins.
Days since 8/8.
Yes.
8/8.
Oh, it's 8/8.
You have to wonder if that was factored into the marketing.
Oh, it was. Yes. We pushed up. Yeah.
Okay. For it sounds like you guys have rolling the copy and all of the direction.
Yeah, we actually, that was not the only thing that we had say in. Mm-hmm. Because when our Chris Regina over at Netflix said that they wanted to release the show in August, we said, do it on August 8th.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, we explained to him what that meant.
Why? I'm like, all right. 8/8 in
Chinese
sounds like, you know, rich, and he was like, got it, done.
And that's how 8/8 came about.
Yeah.
And with that, renewed for season two. So,
fingers crossed. A lot of people have been asking us. Obviously, that's, you know, in the nature of any TV show, you know, they are always asking, when is season two coming out, or when is the next season? I think people need to know that the more they tune in now, the higher the chance of us renewing will be. And we don't want to, you know, deal with the same pattern as network television deals with, is, you know, when it's too late, can't really go back on ourselves and pull the numbers up.
So we need your support and everyone else's
support. We need everyone's support to, you know, spread the word and tune in. That's what really matters.
Speaking of tuning in, what has been the reception so far from your fans, friends, and family on the show and on the experience?
It's been great, actually. It's really nice and refreshing to see fans like, finally our story is getting told, you know, I can see me on screen, this is amazing. These are like, especially there's these story nuances, like from Lily's character dealing with family and kind of responsibility, and people are like, we're seeing this on TV for the first time. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that the story is being told and I can totally relate to it, and it humbles us and makes us feel good that we can do that and provide this outlet for people. Like, you're not alone. We're here with you too, and we know your story.
Exactly. I think especially with a property and a series like this that obviously delves into the fantastical and the supernatural, you know, at its core, you know, us talking, there is this focus on the familial element, mm-hmm. filial piety, which is very endemic to not just Chinese, but larger Asian culture. Mm-hmm. So talk more about kind of like how that inspired you and what that experience was to kind of present that, most importantly, authentically for your audience.
Authenticity was a really very important factor in the creation of this. Our showrunner, John Worth, he said from day one at the table reading, he said, this is a collaboration. I want all of you to speak to me. We want to tell this story together, and I want to tell it in the most authentic and most accurate way possible. So he was open to say if a script comes in and we don't find it realistic in how Asian people behave, like normal behaviors of, let me just tell you an example. The relationship between Jenny and Tommy, even though they just love each other, they don't know how to be there for each other. Mm-hmm. And then there are scenes of them just, you know, struggling to communicate that. And I think that's wildly common in Asian culture, because we are the culture of suppressed emotions. We don't tell each other that we love them. Parents don't mm-hmm. tell us that they love us. We don't hug people. We don't know how to be open that way. And so I wanted to, for example, change a few things, like in the script originally came out, Tommy hugs Jenny before she takes off. I said, that is so unrealistic. Siblings don't touch each other. I mean, and not in that, you know, not at least in my experience, mm-hmm. And certainly not in their relationship, because it's so strained, their relationship.
Yeah, it's a very good consideration. I think it speaks volumes to, again, the type of consideration that you had to do to prepare for this role. So, mm-hmm. and that's a great tip to talk about sort of what type of preparation did you guys do, emotionally, you know, notwithstood, but also physically too, to kind of like really capture the intensity of these two characters in Genuine, Ying Ying, and bring them properly to life? Did you guys go through any type of boot camp or any type of extensive training, stage combat?
Well, as actors, we train martial arts outside on our own, because as an actor, you want to get as many things under your belt, and especially being Asian American, and, you know, stereotype or not, this is going to come across our table. And I don't mind that, because martial arts is something that everyone loves to do.
And it's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool as hell. So we train, but not unlike our cast members, they've all been training since they were like kids, and they're actual martial artists. But we do enough, and then the two of us were the last two to be cast. And so as soon as they cast us, we closed the deal, they flew us out, we had our fittings, and we learned our fights. It was so quick. So it wasn't, you know, your Hollywood luxury story of
training for months and
two to three months.
Yeah, you know, I got to work out, make sure to do all this right and train. And like, no.
Yeah,
like, go.
We just learned it. We just did it.
We're just fortunate that we know and we have a bit of a background.
We know how to do
some of it. And then they're like, okay, using that move, we can combine it with this move, and here's the choreography.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then as far as character preparation, I do have to say, and I've been saying this in other interviews, is that this is the first role that is truly right for me. It's someone who looks like me, who talks like me, who has a background in the upbringing of being in America, you know, and not just, I correct this joke all the time, best friend, open ethnicity, or, you know, techie, who is like just spilling information in to move the plot forward. This is something that, you know, was quite rewarding during the creation.
I mean, I'm a 2,000-year-old monk to begin with, so yeah.
So yeah, we should die,
you know? I mean, growing up, I've watched all these Hong Kong martial arts films because my parents own an Asian American video store.
Love it.
And seeing all these characters in like Hong Kong films, Chinese films, I'm like, oh my god, they're so cool. And they're always like this old wise master. And when we came across this, and they were like, oh yeah, we want you for Ying Ying. I'm like, really? I was like, wait, I get to be like this old wise one, but I'm not old like the traditionally how the character is portrayed.
Like quirky.
And quirky and just portraying a bit more younger, you know, more spunky. And it's amazing that John and our director of the first two episodes, Stephen Fung, they both were like, do it, make it fun, make it different. That's the reason why we cast you. And I was like, all right, let's do it. Let's have fun with this character and add some spunk to it. And the reaction online also has been awesome. They're like, well, that's not what we expected, to be the mentor, to be the teacher.
And the narrator.
Yeah, and the narrator of the show.
I think it's especially, you know, fitting and very resonant, considering that you think about these like these dynastied historical like Asian IPs like Sun Wukong or Guan Yu, and figuring out for audiences that are growing up now, like we have so many Asian American millennials who have experienced Asian cinema and Asian art through our parents, through our grandparents, how to modernize and how to really capture the freshness of a new interpretation. And again, with Ying Ying and even with new characters in the fold, to make that feel restorative and authentic, but also like uniquely you, because like at the end of the day, like I feel like you want to have fun as well, like, you know, obviously like you guys had a lot of fun clear on the set, but like that concept of like unwriting the narrative of what Sun Wukong should be or any type of Chinese character and making it new for even larger audiences as well. So
I think Ying Ying was human.
Why do
all these characters have to be so ethereal?
Yeah.
Like, they're all just, you know, make them relatable.
I think towards the end of the season, we're shooting someone on set one day was like, you're like a Yoda. And I was like,
yeah,
I guess I'm like a Yoda.
Yeah. You're like the punk Yoda.
Yeah, the punk Yoda. Be like, yo, what up? Instead of, hey, you must listen to me.
And with like correct grammar too.
Yeah.
That's another story. Yoda with an undercut. Yeah. A nice jewelry. Yeah. Yeah. As if audience seen anything more to be confused about. This is a question again for Lili. In doing research, you've obviously studied a classic Chinese dance, and you had done a tour with Miss Saigon prior to, you know, your career in acting taking off. Can you tell us about how the experience in theater and dance in many ways prepared you and enhanced you
mm-hmm.
in terms of fighting or stage combat for
hands
this role.
Hands down. It's taught me so much discipline, not just mentally, not just physically, but mentally as well. I was able to pick up choreography much, much quicker than an average person who has not had dance training, because, you know, it's the same thing. It's movement, it's the memorization, it's the structure of how you put things together in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it's absolutely helped in that sense. But dance is also, it was also my gateway in discovering acting, because I was such a painfully shy kid that acting was definitely never ever did I ever tell myself I want to be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
But because I loved dancing, performing classical Chinese dance with Saturday dance school, I thought, well, you know, performing is something that really I enjoy. So I ended up going to high school for dance, and it wasn't until they had open major auditions for their high school musicals every year did I actually really make my way into this industry.
It's amazing. I did some performing too on Saturdays. My performance was pretending to retain any knowledge from Chinese school by my parents.
That's excellent acting.
It was an 8-year acting, method acting gig that honestly paid out in dividends. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll tell you about it all with my agent later. I think it's terrific. I think, just speaking to, again, this idea of shyness too. And I think shyness is something that as Asian Americans, we also feel confined and many times discouraged from, one, pursuing art,
mm-hmm.
two, embracing art,
mm-hmm.
and three, you know, channeling our innate talent, our gifts,
mm-hmm.
in ways that is so public.
Mm-hmm.
So I think whenever I think of dance, when I think so visual and so visible, it affords this unique sensibility that I think, especially, you know, in watching the show, and thinking about, like, traditional, like, classic Jackie Chan films, there's a sense of, like, Chinese opera to all of it that's so
mm-hmm.
powerful. So were you guys kind of inspired, and again, this next question about, you know, were you guys inspired by, you know, the works of the past of all the great sort of fighting auteurs and people who present martial arts in creating your characters in this experience?
Most definitely. I feel like I said before, because of my parents owning a Chinese-American video store, I've watched Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Michelle Yeoh, Donnie Yen growing up.
Yeah.
And I remember my brother and I would watch Once Upon a Time in China and be like, yeah! We're going to be like Jet Li, let's try to fight and let's try to do all that. And like, we're going to be this cool superhero, like kind of try to help people kind of thing. And I think what's so cool about our industry is that we have the power and we have the tools to inspire.
Because that's the thing, you know, as Asian Americans, we didn't have those superheroes
mm-hmm.
here. The superheroes don't look like us.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, growing up with the martial artists like you previously mentioned, those were our superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And now to be able to play something that inspires even, you know, the younger generation is
it's amazing.
It's pretty cool.
And like what you're saying, like Asians are known to be shy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I hope that like more shows, like our shows and the rest of the Asian American TV shows and stories are coming out now, and it can tell the future generations, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Create art and inspire, and it's a good thing, so the parents will also support their kids in doing so, and I think we need that.
Exactly. And with it comes, you know, obviously an additional pressure to present something authentically, and I think
mm-hmm.
what's so great about our conversation is that you touched upon, you know, being, you know, a working actor from an Asian American background in Hollywood, the expectation that, oh, you should learn martial arts, or there
mm-hmm.
is,
mm-hmm.
or it is an asset.
Mm-hmm.
And have you guys experienced any type of trouble navigating that and not wanting to be necessarily pigeonholed, or how to leverage it in a way that feels like you're in control of the narrative of your characters and of your career, you know, in full view of how people be like, oh, you know, of course Asian people can fight because they, you know, Jackie Chan, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. In the very beginning, I didn't grow up in this industry at all. Like I went to business school. And when I first became an actor, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to learn how to fight because I can act. I want to do drama. I don't want to be pigeonholed as the martial artist. And then as I was growing older, I was like, wait a second. I should be proud to know martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
I should be proud to know that this is what represents us and we can use this to educate. And like, if you look around, like, there's so many people that loves martial arts. It's not a pigeonhole. We can use it to inspire and make it bigger than something else. So I was like, and I start taking kung fu classes, and knock on wood, luckily, Assassins came along, and I was like, oh, I can put my martial arts skills together, and, and I'm not fighting against it anymore.
I think that, again, speaks to this idea that we rarely get a chance to have this platform, this dialogue, to speak, you know, truthfully about what it means to have martial arts as a component of our character, because you think too how it is a vestige of our culture, and if we're going to present our story, it has to be our full story. So I really do, like, I have nothing but respect for you guys for embracing that, and not like, you know, I think a lot of my friends from the industry as well, like, are like, oh, I shouldn't, like, should I learn some rudimentary type of combat training, because it might, like, if they see me, if they see a Korean face and they know how to do Taekwondo, it's like, it's such a personal experience too within the confines of, like, this industry. But
I think, you know, if it's positive, I'm not against it. I think the problem with the lack of Asian representation wasn't so much that, oh, they must all fight, it's the fact that we're always the takeout person, or the best friend, or the person who delivers the intel in a cop show. You know, when that is what people are looking up to as Asian Americans, then that's something that I'm not okay with. But if it's strong, if it inspires, if it moves forward, then martial arts is great. I mean, but let's not forget that, you know, martial arts is across the board. It's not just partial to Asians.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, if you're talking about history, if you know about every, like, kung fu style, martial arts style, there's so much history behind it.
Yeah.
And that was, as I was learning martial arts, I find it fascinating. I was like, wow, this is why this happened, why this is formed. And there's so much to it than just the forms and the fights.
Exactly.
And there's this whole back history that I think we need to tell that story as well.
And especially for a lot of, you know, Asian Americans growing up now, like millennials, Gen Zs, who feel an innate need to acculturate and assimilate into Western society, there is often this resistance between, oh, this thing I did on Saturdays that my parents gently encouraged me to do is something that I don't want to do because I feel ashamed of, you know, my race or something. So I think knowing that and seeing people like you present that, you know, with fierceness and with confidence, you know, it's
but why were we ashamed? Because we were excluded. Because I had classmates who made fun of me for having to go to tutoring after school so that I can catch up on everything, so I can learn two languages, so that I can learn the violin or the cello or the piano. That's why it's shamed, but it's not a bad thing. And
no, not at all.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for some of them, it might be a spoiler, but, you know, Lawrence plays the piano in the show. You know, I'm pretty sure there's a backstory to that. And, you know, there's Jenny's character, she's got all this suppressed anger, because we all know, and I think that applies to many cultures, is what the struggle between fulfilling your parents' wishes, how much that means to you versus how much you want to pursue your own dreams. Different cultures, different choices, and different expectations. And then this explores what it means to be, you know, Chinese American with parents who want you to run their restaurant, and you want to do your own thing, but you can't because you're a good daughter. You know, well, stuff like that.
And, you know, speaking of daughters and that element, you know, strong-willed, independent Asian female representation that avoids the common pratfalls of tiger moms and femme fatales that we've seen done a million times over, are common, you know, hurdles facing Asian American women in the acting community, in entertainment, even in, like, contemporary times now, which is, you know, obviously very infuriating. So in that sense, why are roles like Jenny and Ying important for you, but also important for the community of young women and young women of color to see growing up?
That we're still human. I think that a lot of cultural expectations make us so... not robotic is not the right way. More like... That vision of this perfect son or daughter is not real, and this is a pretty raw.
This is real. It's the truth. It's something like is. Okay, sorry. It's not even just Asian American. It's American, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone goes through these struggles, and we're not so different from everyone else. And I think we need more stories like this. That's needs to be told, that be like, oh, hey, I can relate to Jenny. even though I'm not Asian, like, oh, I go through the same struggle, like my parents are,
yeah, or
are
the
breathing
sibling
down my throat, and like doing this
sibling
relationships.
Yeah,
everyone can relate to it, so it's not that different. And here's the thing, if we don't normalize it, people are still gonna think that, oh, you're just the best friend, oh, you're just, you know, this kung fu fighting Asian. Like, no, that's not true.
Yeah,
we are humans, right? And the end of the day, I've been saying in other interviews that we're just Americans, and why don't we keep it that way? Like, we're all Americans, we share the same story. It's not because what our skin color is that changes the perception of who we are, because we're something American, whatever it is, we're still American. We share basically the same experiences as human beings. And I guess, I mean, for Ying Ying, she's a more mystical character. So I think it's just, hey, it's cool to have a superhero to look up to that you can see on TV as well, that you can see any, like, I mean, I loved, like, Marvel shows growing up. I'm like, oh my God, there's these superheroes, but I've never seen a superhero like me.
Yeah.
And now I hope that I get to inspire a little girl and be like, oh my God, I can be like that superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And be like that, like Ying Ying. It's like, I can do that too.
You know, it's vested with a certain, almost like, ethical responsibility to shoulder that, because in the world of acting, it's such a front-facing, such a visual
mm-hmm.
presentation of that. You know, we have, you know, great writers and producers who are, you know, I think we think about the idea that, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats, and that this entire force, people behind the scenes, your directors, you know, who have Asian backgrounds, who are also considering that too, but being kind of like, you know, the front line of that experience, you know, to feel that connection with your audience, especially ones that are growing up with this media, it's a nice pivot to, like, my next, it's a fun question, but, you know, obviously it was mentioned that you guys are deeply inspired by, you know, the early Jet Li, the Donnie Yens, you know, the Michelle Yeohs. What were some of, like, your favorite action movies growing up that just, like, cemented that appreciation for action in general?
For me, I don't think I can name them, like, because, you know, you had...
We had a whole video story.
Yeah, so she can probably name them.
Yeah.
I can probably just remember flashes of different films with, you know, the Michelle Yeohs and
mm-hmm.
Donnie Yens and Jackie Chan's, but I can't really put what movie to what, because obviously we've seen all of them,
mm-hmm.
and in my memory as a child, it's just mumble jumbled into just cool,
movies.
Just a whole lot of coolness.
You ready for the list?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do this.
Get the
okay.
microphone closer.
Okay, get this microphone closer.
Yeah.
I loved Once Upon a Time in China growing up, right? Jet Li was so badass. My brother and I will always try to mimic the seven kicks, and we will always hurt ourselves. It was amazing. Always. Because it's impossible. There's gravity. You can't
yeah.
do seven kicks midair. And that evolved into, like, watching, like, the Jackie Chan... oh, my God. That name just ran out of my head. Anyways, let's cut to Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
And Wing Chun.
Yep.
That's the first... For me, watching on TV, in movies, to see a female cool superhero who's kind of like a superhero, a martial artist, who's honing her own. And I was like, oh my God, I want to be like Michelle Yeoh. I remember very vividly that scene when they're fighting with the tofus and making sure they don't break the tofus. And I was like, I want to do that too. My brother and I have tofu, and we're like, let's not bring tofus. Right? We were kids. We're like, oh yeah, let's move around and, like,
good hashtag.
Hold the tofu up,
don't
making sure you don't break the tofus.
It's trending already.
From there, and then, like, later on, then you have Donnie Yen, and he did films like Yip Man,
yeah.
SPL. He was just amazing. I was like, I want to be like Donnie Yen. Like, growing up, I'm like, I want to be all of these people, but we didn't have the opportunities to do so here, and now we do. And I find it, like, we kicked open the door, and now we just need to hold these doors open.
It is true. You guys feel like in the 2000s, like, it seems like every 3 months there was a new Jet Li movie coming out that kind of, it kind of, you know, kept the heartbeat of, like, you know, contemporary Asian, you know, martial arts cinema alive. And then I think something happened in the late 2000s that kind of, like, dissipated a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, we're definitely seeing, like, a resurgence of it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think of shows like Into the Badlands,
mm-hmm.
Warrior
mm-hmm.
on
mm-hmm.
Cinemax, and now obviously Wu Assassin.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think is happening in kind of, like, the cultural, like, zeitgeist? Do you think there's, like, a renewed, you know, verve and enthusiasm for this genre and this sort of exploration? Or is it just... good timing, or just Asians just have always been killing it? Is...
Well, obviously, I think Asians have been killing it for a while, but just not given many opportunities, and now there's so many more projects for us. But, you know, we've been saying this whole movement has been amazing, but at the same time, we want to make sure that the pendulum doesn't swing too far the other way. We want, the point of this is we want this to be normal, for us to be, you know, inclusive, not special, just as, we don't want special treatment just because we're Asian. We just want special treatment because we're cool. You know, we just want, you know, we just want to be doing good work without being at an advantage or disadvantage.
Like, again, normalizing us as Americans.
Yeah, just as people.
As people, yeah. Not even Americans, just as people.
We all just
humans.
Do stuff without, like, checking up the boxes.
Yeah. I feel like the whole martial arts thing never really went away. It's just that there was so much happening, and people were like, it was in the back burner. People were always going back and watching the old films, right?
Yeah.
And now they're like, hey, it's been a while. Why haven't we made anything like that? People miss it. Now it's back. And I hope that we keep it going. It's part of our lives.
Yeah. And the idea that, like, it's not on the burden of just one person. I think I keep going back to Jackie Chan because I think because I get sad, it's like he's getting older now. Like, you definitely see it. But you guys remember, like, how prolific, you know, his time was in the 80s when he was developing his own style, where it just was the editing and all of that, and just hoping that the legacy of, you know, going all back to, like, you know, even like Bruce Lee at this point, like, the people who were the foundational elements of that movement are dispersed in, like, all of our everyday movements and all of our everyday careers and goals. So
I hope that we're making them proud.
Yeah.
I'm hoping, like, if Bruce Lee was alive, he's proud. I hope Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Donnie Yen's team, like, wow.
Yeah.
These guys are making us proud. We're trying to follow their footstep and making it more acceptable by general public.
Yeah.
Not just, oh yeah, this is like a Hong Kong film or a Chinese film.
Yeah,
you know?
we just don't want it to be a trend. We just, you know, because with all trends, they end.
Literally, it's built into the word. I think that also, as a next step to, in considering, I know this has been a focal point of our talk, but it's just so fascinating for me,
mm-hmm.
but the next step of educating audiences about the differences of martial arts too,
mm-hmm.
you know, not clumping it, people don't think it's all just kung fu, or if it's all just karate or jiu-jitsu,
mm-hmm.
or taekwondo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys sense that there could be a time, I mean, hopefully, this is wishful thinking here, where we can explore the nuances of these respective disciplines,
mm-hmm.
in a way that feels that bronze, like a Korean-centric story or a Japanese-centric story within the Asian American canon that celebrates, you know, the uniqueness of these experiences in martial arts.
Mm-hmm. But what was the question, like, do I think that
we'll see sort of like a flourishing of that, where, like, you know, shows can be dedicated to, like, one type, or there's a culmination of different styles? And
our show is very specific. I don't know if you saw some of the network the Netflix PR slides that they recently did. Jenny's style is MMA. Hers, but the way they, like, clipped it together was just so funny. But yeah, all of our characters have different focuses.
And most definitely,
and styles.
I think, yeah, what you're saying, it would continue going. It would keep going on as long as we have the right storytellers and the right allies to help us tell these stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, going back to our showrunner, because John Worth, without him, we couldn't tell the story, and he's willing to collaborate, right?
Yeah.
So we need people like that to support us, not just Asian Americans, but our allies
around
us.
And John did an amazing job, because, you know, we all want, as Asians in this industry, we love seeing, you know, like Crazy Rich Asians. They wanted to hire real Singapore, you know, everyone wants to stay as true,
mm-hmm.
To the specific ethnicity. And because Iko is Indonesian, John incorporated that into his character, being Indonesian and having migrated here and being adopted by Uncle Six. So, yeah, like, even, yeah, they took stories out of our true, our actors.
Yeah.
And made it real.
Yeah. I mean, we just have to keep on going and pushing forward and having storytellers not being afraid to tell these stories, write these stories, you know, make these shows happen, make these films happen. And if that happens, we're unstoppable, right?
Truly. And it's always, it feels aspirational, and it feels like there's momentum too. And, you know, true to any marginalized community or community of color, there's always going to be a sense of, you know, discussion within. And I think speaking to sort of, you know, the casting again of, you know, kind of like this tentpole moment last August with Crazy Rich Asians,
mm-hmm.
you know, the internal dispute about who gets to take these parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's fascinating, you know, in Eco Story that there was this sense of collaboration
mm-hmm.
and, like, inclusion that I, you know, it's honestly really unfortunate that a lot of times in the Asian American community, we strive for authenticity to the point that it feels, like, divisive.
Yes.
Meaning, like...
That's a new problem
yes.
that's
yeah.
coming up now, is that we... I think we also have to remember that, you know, let's not take our eyes off the prize. Like, we need to do this together and not turn against each other
mm-hmm.
because a role is not exactly authentic. Like, if we're going to do it, let's all just be even across the board and see who is best for the role.
I think labels create segregation, and we should get rid of the labels if we
mm-hmm.
can. And I don't think it's necessary. And then at the end of the day, like, we keep on referring back to this, but we're humans, right? And just be authentic. That's it. That's all we need. We don't.
But it's not so black and white, though.
It is.
There's
not,
always
like,
going to, like, we're gonna say this. This is gonna go out on the internet, and somebody always will have something to say that will it'll backlash somehow, some ways. But it's not that easy. But we can only do our best.
I mean,
it just feels like we're again. To echo your words, that we're losing sight of the bigger prize here. Like, I remember when the trailer for Mulan came out
mm-hmm.
and people were criticizing her face. They thought her face didn't look Chinese enough. That was legitimate.
Even though she was Chinese.
Yeah, yeah. Like, she didn't look like the Mulan that.
Yeah, they will always
had,
have something to
yeah,
say.
Yeah.
Always.
Like, her eyes weren't big enough. Her face was, like, too pale. And it's like, it makes it like
that's
maybe
insane.
These comments are coming from
your own Chinese
yeah.
parents?
Yeah. Now we're projecting here.
That's totally, 100%, I am.
Just you know, just you should
be
eat,
so
but
pretty
you lose
if
you
just,
weight.
Yeah,
you know.
Let's unpack that.
Yeah.
But
all jokes
aside, like, it speaks to that, like, that conditioning that we've experienced where, like, we have this perception of how we think should be.
Yeah.
But we also know that we're already fighting to get these stories on stage.
Yeah.
So.
But see, that's in itself very Asian. I now have gotten to this level, and I must be dutiful and influence the rest.
Yeah.
So ridiculous.
And speaking of, you know, influencing the rest, you know, obviously the show's taken off. You guys have gotten a lot of great critical praise. What is your individual hope for the show? And for fans who may not have heard of it or are just coming into the fold, like, how would you present the story? How would you call them in into, you know, this experience that is Woo Assassins?
That is,
they're on the fence or just, you know, hearing it through a friend?
Oh, it truly is such a kick-ass martial arts show. The fights, we all go on set and watch each other do it on days that we're not even working just to watch each
it's
other
entertaining.
Fight. It's so amazing. Watching the teams rehearse, being in the rehearsals, it's so fulfilling. I can't even tell you. So that aspect, of course, given, you will be entertained. It doesn't matter. If you like supernatural elements, you're in for a treat. And then if you like good drama, you know,
we have it too.
So I just think, you know, I hope people pay attention to the details that have been written into the stories. The scenes are quite intense when it comes to being culturally appropriate and sort of like when we have someone pour tea for you and you thank them with the fingers.
Yeah.
That's in it if you pay attention.
Yeah.
So things like that, little things like that.
Yeah, we just want, you know, we want our fans to know, like, thank you for supporting us and keep spreading the word, because we need to get more eyeballs on it for people to normalize us in the end of the day. So
mm-hmm.
if we can do it together, it's all about support. We're going to support and try to push forward. I just said something earlier today. I was like, keep creating your art and we'll be there to keep supporting.
Yeah.
And we should do that for all around the board, we shouldn't discriminate or anything. We should just keep doing so.
It's this philosophy of lifting as you climb. And I think, you know, within the confines of Asian American entertainment, especially on this level in Hollywood, there's such an onus right now. I think we feel that we're right at that maybe CRA last year was a, you know, a blip,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't just the peak.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is something that we can collectively do, whether it be promoting it through a podcast or talking about it openly or just having dialogue be presented. You know,
mm-hmm.
it feels additive, and I think that's just so powerful. So.
I don't want us to forget, though, like some real deal OG, Lucy Liu, being Charlie's Angels.
Sandra Oh. Killing it.
I mean, Lucy, I just got to work with her recently, and I was just, you know, dorking out the whole time.
Yeah, as many would.
Yeah, I was like, and she's, you know, I grew up watching her in Ally McBeal. She was the only face that I saw on network television during that time. But, you know, good stuff.
Yeah. The OG.
The OG paved the way for
yeah.
us, and
yeah.
we should now keep these doors open and pave the way for the others to come.
Yeah.
Mm.
Speaking of others to come, what is next for both of you? Do you have any projects that you want to talk about or anything that's on the pipeline?
The comedy that I just did with Lucy Liu is called Why Women Kill, and I play her daughter. And it's, if you're open to seeing me as a completely different person, definitely tune in. It takes place in the 80s. My shoulder pads have names. My hair has room to hold gerbils. It's great. It's so funny, and it's by the creator of Desperate Housewives and Devious Maids, Mark Cherry. It's very funny. So that's coming up. It premiered on CBS All Access last night, so it's a weekly thing. So
love
I have
it.
a few episodes in the series.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Silly.
If you want to see a 17-year-old surfer instead of a 2,000-year-old monk, you can
range.
Check out. Yeah, range. So versatile.
I know.
I'm on this other show on AMC called Lodge 49, and we are on our second season, and season 2 just premiered this past Monday. And
they all just came in at the same time.
Yeah.
Crazy.
With that, once again, I want to send a big thank you to Lee Jun Lee and Celia Al on behalf of Hyphen Magazine. Congratulations once again on Woo Assassins on Netflix. Want to give a shout out also to Persona PR for providing a lovely boutique office space for us to indulge ourselves in some sunshine. Check out the show on Netflix and just keep telling stories.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Thank you for having us, and
thank
you for
you.
Helping us get our voice heard outside.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank
That's
you.
That's good stuff.